From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 9th day of June 2016. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker. It's Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. At the end of our time together, Matt Bennett will join us from Channel Seeds, Bennett Consulting out of Windsor, Illinois, to take a look at the cash grain market. And along the way, we'll discuss the weather forecast with Mike Tenora. We'll take some extra time with Mr. Tenora today, so he'll come up a bit earlier in the program than usual to look at a very delicate, maybe even difficult weather forecast, not only for next week, but maybe for a much longer time across the U.S. Corn Belt. And we'll do that all in preparation for tomorrow's USDA World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimate Report. It's due out at 11 o'clock. You can find the details on it during the day tomorrow at 11 a.m. at willag.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Here the way things finished up on this Thursday afternoon in Chicago at the CME Group. July contract in the corn pit was down 4¾ cents at $4.26½. September at $4.30½, 4¼ lower. December corn down 3½ cents at $4.33½. And the May futures at $4.41 down 3. July of next year 3½ lower at $4.43¼. Complex July beans at $11.76, a penny and three quarters lower. August at $11.72, down one. September up a half, $11.59¾. November beans at $11.52¾, 2½ higher. January $11.48¼, up 3¼. The March contract at $11.14¼, up 6 cents. All in the bean pit. Bean oil at $33.03, up 14 cents. Bean meal down $3.60 at $413.50. July soft red winter wheat 9¼ lower. The harvest month at $5.10¼. September at $5.21½, down 9. The hard red July down 8½ cents at $4.84¼. Live cattle futures in Chicago finished the nearby June at $123.32½. They're up 30 cents. August feeders at $147.37½ lower for the day. And the lean hogs in the June contract at $82.80 per 100 pounds, 75 cents higher. July at $86.25, down 77½ cents. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this 9th day of June before the USDA's report that's released tomorrow morning at 11 a.m. A quick reminder to visit our website right at that point. You can follow me at Commodity Week on Twitter if you're a Twitter user, although I'll just post that directly into the website and we'll have the numbers up as quickly as they are available from the United States Department of Agriculture. That normally happens within the first couple of minutes. On the line now to talk about what happened in Chicago today and expectations for tomorrow is Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Good afternoon to you, Dan.
How you doing, Todd?
I am very well. Fortunately, today we're not as hot yet as we're going to get tomorrow, the next day. And I guess the markets have been reacting to some of this 90, 95-degree weather that's coming into the Midwest. Anything else been moving the market for the last couple of days?
Well, I think today's weakness was probably generated by a couple of things. The weather maps overnight turned a little wetter. Now they could turn drier tomorrow morning, but at least for today, they were wetter than what they were yesterday. And there is some pretty good chances that the Corn Belt is going to pick up a rain here over the next 7 days. So that kind of put some pressure on the markets this morning. Also, the dollar it had a pretty good decline this past week, or after it posted its monthly reversal to the upside during May. It had no upside follow through. So everybody that was long the dollar and they couldn't get it to follow through begin to bail. So the dollar broke sharply this week. Yesterday, it hit a 62% retracement of that May advance, and today it was able to rally off of that 62% retracement level. So you did have the dollar strength come into play here today, and then you had the weather forecast turning more favorable. And I think that is kind of what kicked the marketing gear to have softness early. Of course, soybeans were able to kind of regroup and kind of come back and almost erase all their losses. I guess we are down a penny three quarter in the July, but we were up two in November, whereas corn, you know, pretty much was a 3 to 4 cent lower type market.
So we're on the top end of the market here. We have a USDA report tomorrow, a couple of hours yet for producers to do something with new crop and or old crop if they have it left in the bin from last year. What are your suggestions?
Well, my suggestions are, and I've really thought a lot about market advice business basically since I retired, and I guess I've been kind of disappointed with the market advisory business over the past 6 months, whether it's the grain companies have decided to get in the market advisory business, and of course you got the brokerage houses in the advisory business, and then you got the newsletter people in the advisory business, and I guess now I kind of got an opinion that it's a non-funded position since I'm funding my own opinion nowadays. I don't get no paycheck. I don't sell no newsletters. I don't own any commission houses anymore, and I've been in all three of those. So I've swam with all the sharks. And I guess, you know, a lot of farmers got wrapped up in selling some of these new crop beans way too early. The commercial grain trade and all of your big fundamental research firms were so bearish these beans. They got a lot of people bearish beans. These beans were going to go to $7.50 or whatnot, and got a lot of people sold at $9. And now we're sitting here at 11 and a half. Now, and you've heard me say this all winter, is the odds of this market to make higher highs as we moved into the season was much greater than any time in the past 3-4 years. And that's exactly what we've done. So now we have come into a time window here. I'm not going to call no top, but this is a definitely time window for farmers to seriously look at the market and make some moves. Now, you know, back in the Outlook meeting that we had at WILL, these were dream numbers. You know, $4.33 on these corn, even though we're off of the highs. We got November beans here at $11.52. Those were basically dream-type numbers. I think if somebody would have said those were going to be where we were in the first week of June, probably we would have been sent to a psychiatric ward. So I think the market did what farmers wanted it to do, and I think farmers need to really defend these positions. They either get in there and do some cash sales, get in there and do some, you know, buy some puts, whatever they need to do. But I think these are levels, and like I said, I'm not in the advisory business. It's a self-funded opinion. But just looking at the statistics, this is not the time frame to get bullish on, I don't believe. If you're going to be bullish from here on out, then you have to be in the drought camp. You're going to have some adverse weather. And I look at tomorrow's report, and I look at it, if you plug in some of the estimates that's coming out of Brazil, on the South American soybean crop, on the South American corn crop. If USDA uses those numbers and plugs those into their balance sheets, then those numbers are going to be fairly bullish. But the thing of it is that it's going to be old news. So I have a hard time figuring out why tomorrow's report would be bullish, because I think if they use the low-end numbers that has been touted is considered old news. If they don't use them, then it's going to be disappointing, and then I think you would have a bearish reaction to the report. So I guess I'm kind of in the opinion, the way the market has performed this week, is that we're probably due for some kind of mid-month correctional decline. Now, that could be more of a consolidation sideways pattern. It could be, you know, kind of a steep decline. And then we start gearing up for the BIC report, which will be coming at us on June 30th. And that will probably be the a killer one way or the other on either market. Soybeans, I think, have the best fundamentals because I don't think the farmers moved very many corn acres out of corn acres to bean acres. I think it was maybe a smaller number. We'll find out on June 30th. But beans really need to have an 85 million acre planted bean crop in the U.S. To keep these beans from taking another run to the upside. Now, technically, the numbers that I've been kind of watching is like a 38% retracement level on beans back to the all-time high, comes in at this $12 area. So we've gotten kind of close to that. Now, corn, we really still haven't done any major retracement. We're still messing around with like a 23-24% retracement level back toward the all-time high that was posted in 12. But if we begin to get into some weather problems and all of a sudden the crop is going to look a whole lot smaller than what USDA's got on their balance sheet right now, then you can begin to start talking about some major retracements. And I think you can talk about a 38% retracement like on December corn back to its high that it made in 2012, we could maybe start talking about something around 520. Now, I know those are kind of lofty numbers, but you're going to have a weather market do that. I mean, you're going to have to drop that yield down 5-6 bushels, take it down to 163, 162. And then maybe instead of having 93 million acres corn planted, we maybe only have 91 million acres planted. Then I think you could maybe fundamentally begin to justify that corn could go higher. But corn's kind of been capped off here by farmers selling, both old and new. I mean, anybody that held on to corn, this was their opportunity to unload it at $4 because Central Illinois average corn prices did pop above that $4 mark. And that was the number that they were wanting for. And that was one of the reasons why they were holding it. So that's why the corn market's been kind of capped off. Farmers were talked out of their beans last fall and early winter at $9. So there's no more farmer beans to sell. There's probably a few around. There might be even some 2010 beans in the bin somewhere. But for the most part, the farmer inventory of soybeans is pretty skinny. And that's why it probably could be, if we don't get the big planted acres, the soybean market still probably has some punch in it. Depending upon what depending upon what the final numbers are when that South American, soybean crop is kind of finalized.
It's always great to talk to you. Thank you so much for taking so much time with us today.
Very well.
Dan Zwicker is with Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas, joins us on this Thursday afternoon on the Closing Market Report. You can find him online on our website at willag.org not long after this report airs. Don't forget that we'll also post tomorrow morning the USDA World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimate numbers to the WILLAG.org website, along with the Twitter account at Commodity Week at 11 a.m. Central Time. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Mike Tenura is here. He's with T-Storm Weather out of Chicago. Mike, it's going to be hot this weekend, really hot. What can you tell me about the heat and then weather after that?
Well, it certainly will be one of the bigger pattern changes you can have. Temperatures this afternoon are only in the 60s across northern Illinois, but if you go 200 miles to the west, it's well into the 90s across central and western Iowa. That heat is expanding further to the east, and we'll see temperatures well into the 90s across a large corn and soybean area over the next few days. The only limiting factor in the near term is that the upper-level warm front, which is what's expanding to the north and east today, is going to trigger areas of thunderstorms today, tonight, tomorrow night, and even on Saturday. So those will steadily be pushing to the north and east with time. And eventually, by the time we get into Saturday, everybody will pretty much be seeing hot weather and mainly dry weather, with any thunderstorm primarily limited to parts of Wisconsin and maybe over to Michigan, too.
And then what about next week?
Well, next week we easily have one of the most challenging forecasts that we've seen in the U.S. in quite a while. We know that a system out in the Pacific Ocean is going to move into the Rocky Mountains this weekend and then eventually end up somewhere in the Corn Belt or Plains. Normally, what happens in this situation is a system just kind of blasts on through to the east, makes one round of thunderstorms in any given area, and then that's the end of it. That's the way it looked as recently as yesterday and even the day before. But a number of hints are starting to develop and suggest to us that this system might actually disconnect from the jet stream, thereby producing a little bit more rain than was initially expected, with widespread totals of 3/4 inch to 1.5 inches. At this point, we think that scenario is fairly probable, and it would initially affect parts of Nebraska and South Dakota around Monday, and then move through the Corn Belt around Tuesday and Wednesday of next week. So we do think that there is going to be a fairly significant rain for a fairly significant proportion of corn and soybeans. And this rain actually is a little bit needed. Some areas, especially to the west of Illinois, haven't really seen any rain now for more than a week, and things are drying out pretty quickly.
Is it the beginning of a messy forecast system for a longer period of time?
Well, there's no question that the answer to that is yes. And the reason is this. Part of the reason that we're having this heat that's developing, you know, today and over the next few days is because a fairly intense upper-level high for this time of the year has formed. It's not going to last, though. That's why it's going to rain next week. But here's the thing. The system that comes through next week really only masks the upper-level high. It basically disrupts it and forces it to kind of reassemble further to the south and west. But the point is that it doesn't go away. It actually looks like it'll turn real intense somewhere near Arizona late next week and next weekend. And then the question always is going to be, for a while here, what is this thing going to do? Is it going to re-expand like we've had happen this week and this weekend? Or is it going to somehow stay further to the south as waves of energy move across it? We don't know the answer to this, but we do know that that's what we have to watch. This upper-level high is going to be the key to weather beyond next week. It's probably going to be the key to weather at the end of June. And more than likely, once you see this type of scenario, it will linger in some fashion for a while. Whether or not it bubbles into the Corn Belt, that's what we're trying to figure out.
I have one more question for you. When we get an upper level high and it centers itself in that southwest, is that where we find ourselves in most danger of the expansion of the high or hot, potentially dry conditions historically?
Well, the upper level high always has to come from somewhere. They don't just appear out of nowhere. And so the important thing is that this one more or less developed about a week ago in the west. And that's why you might have noticed that Phoenix, Arizona had 4 consecutive days of record heat just several days ago. And that was due to the upper level high that is now shifting into the Corn Belt. So here it is. We have it. Again, it gets beaten down essentially by this system next week. But all that really does is just kind of move it further to the south and west, allows temperatures to return to normal across the Corn Belt. But then after all that is said and done, now it's 10 days from now, still only June 19th, and the question is, okay, the upper level high is still on the map. It didn't go anywhere. It just shifted around. It didn't disappear. Now, is it going to come back? You know, this is always going to be the issue to deal with, at least, you know, for a couple more weeks. You know, so I just am trying to point out that, you know, no matter what the weather forecast looks like in the near term, or in the medium term, taking us out to about 10 to 14 days, more than likely, until further notice, you're going to have to keep an eye on that thing. Again, it doesn't have to move into the Corn Belt, but it's there. It is moving into the Corn Belt now. That shows us that it can do that. But whether or not it does remains a question. And, you know, and there is some rain preceding whatever were to happen beyond 10 to 14 days from now.
Mike, thanks so much.
You're welcome, Todd. You have a great day.
You too. Mike Tenura is with T-Storm Weather. He's in Chicago, Illinois. Matt Bennett from Bennett Consulting and Channel Seeds at Windsor, Illinois, now joins us to take a look at the cash grain market. Thanks, Matt, for being with us. Tell me a bit about your thoughts as it's related to tomorrow's USDA report and the higher prices that we've been seeing for corn and soybeans and what producers might do.
You know, looking at corn prices here in the last couple of days, yesterday getting over 440, most everyone that I talk to within, you know, a couple hundred miles of me can get over $4 fall delivery right out of the field, which definitely opens eyes, you know, and some people a fair amount more than that. So we definitely were recommending to go ahead and move forward, at least get started on sales if guys hadn't gotten started just yet. Soybeans, no-brainer for me. We're so far above the insurance price that a person needs to sell insurance bushels. And bottom line to me, I'd get to at least a third, maybe a half sold there. And as far as the USDA report goes, you know, I think that the supply and demand balance sheet's going to, you know, tighten up a little bit, both corn and beans. Demand's been phenomenal. Yesterday, ethanol demand, unbelievable corn usage for ethanol. I think we outpaced the pace by 8 million bushels in today, 1.5. Excellent on exports. So I think it'll be an interesting report.
Have you thought much about the next year's crop, meaning the 2017 crop, and whether producers need to look at prices further out?
Yes, definitely. We said once we got over $10 on no beans, a person needed to look some creative ways to sell. If he wanted to sell a little bit, it's pretty tough to do it with a fall delivery contract because base is going to be so wide that far out. You know, there's some different things you can do, whether it's hybrid contracts. But in my opinion, protecting $10 on a portion of bushels, there's nothing wrong with that because, there's a huge inverse from this year to next year. And I think we have to understand that if we have a decent crop in South America, goes ahead and plants a bunch of beans, which has definitely been reported, we could be right back where we were at 3 months ago.
How do you go about doing that?
Well, I think one thing on the hybrid contract, you know, it depends on who you talk to, but the accumulator risk versus reward type contracts, there's a lot of quality in those contracts, especially if you manage the risk side of it. And so, AgriVisor does some things that I work with there. I know Gavilon does things like that and ADM as well. So, you know, there's a lot of different ways you can do this, but I definitely want people to understand the contract because if you do get a risk versus reward and can manage the risk, they can be a real tool.
All right. Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate you taking the time with us today, and we'll talk with you again next week.
Thank you.
Matt Bennett is with Bennett Consulting and Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois. In agricultural news, the United States Environmental Protection Agency today is holding a hearing on the RFS, the Renewable Fuel Standard, which sets the amount of corn-based ethanol that can be used in the nation's gasoline supply, other biofuels as well. An American Farm Bureau representative told the EPA during the hearing today to follow the statute under the RFS. Michael Clements of the National Association of Farm Broadcasting has more.
During a public hearing in Kansas City, Missouri, an Iowa Farm Bureau member told the EPA to stay the course Congress laid out under the RFS. American Farm Bureau Congressional Relations Director Andrew Walmsley says EPA needs to reconsider the proposal.
We're all kind of left scratching our heads as to why EPA is not meeting the statutory requirements. There's enough biofuel out there. There's enough renewable identification numbers, which is a system that helps refiners meet the standards available. So we're telling EPA to stick with statute and reconsider what they have proposed.
He says the RFS, just like other government policies, is a contract made by Congress and agreed to by the agriculture industry. By following the statute, the EPA can bring certainty into the rural economy.
When EPA doesn't stick to what we all agreed to, it makes us wonder what's next, both from having predictability in the marketplace and being able to meet the demands of growing food, fiber, and fuel, but what that also does to stifle future innovation.
The EPA is accepting comments on the agency's proposal until July 11th.
We're hopeful that through today's event in Kansas City, along with the opportunity to provide public comment, that they'll reconsider their proposal and get back on track. Otherwise, we continue to question in their understanding of the challenges we face across rural America, and sure does get frustrating for a lot of our farmers and ranchers.
That's Farm Bureau Congressional Relations Director Andrew Walmsley. Our thanks to Michael Clements from NAFB for gathering that audio. You can check out what U.S. EPA has to say about the volumes for the 2017 RFS on the FarmDoc Daily website. U of I's Scott Irwin, agricultural economist, says it comes up about 200 million gallons short of the 15 billion gallon statute, relatively speaking. It's a mandate for corn-based ethanol. However, given the number of miles that are being driven in the United States this year, it's likely to increase by default to the 15 billion gallon cap written into the statute. We'll stay with agricultural policy, but move from Kansas City to Washington. The Coalition for a Safe, Affordable Food Supply and the National Association of State Departments of Agriculture this week called on lawmakers to make a deal to block the Vermont labeling law. The groups made the push as Senate Agriculture Committee Chairman Republican Pat Roberts of Kansas and Ranking Member Debbie Stabenow of Michigan are meeting to discuss a compromise on the labeling of genetically modified foods. Roberts said at a Bloomberg government event that the agreement is down to three sticking points, but he didn't elaborate. In a joint news release, the groups expressed confidence that a Roberts-Stabenow compromise will get 60 votes in the Senate and will be passed by the House before the Vermont law goes into effect on July 1st. However, the groups add, for this to happen, a Roberts-Stabenow compromise must be reached this week. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.